I'm passing over chapter 3. It's a great, great story. And such a testimony of the faith and the commitment of those three young men. Such a testimony of the presence, the faithfulness of the Lord to deliver his people. But our topic in this series is Bible prophecies, biblical prophecies. And there are no direct prophecies in that chapter. So we will pass over it. If you're not familiar with it, please go home and read chapter 3. I will say, though, that Nebuchadnezzar, well, he raised that statue. I had to sort of Photoshop this with, well, anyway. It showed the giant man about as twice as tall as a human being, so I stretched him out because, according to the Bible, he was approximately 9 feet wide and 90 feet tall. So he was more like an engraved column than an actual representation of a person. But in raising that image, it was a matter of pride. He was focusing the interpretation of the dream he'd had on himself as the head of gold. So straight line, he raises up an image of gold. And he was putting all the emphasis on himself and not seeing God in it, not seeing God in control of things, not seeing God as judging things. It's just like me, me, me. And that's something to be careful of. I believe it was a manifestation of what Daniel later spoke of to Belshazzar when he said in Daniel 5:20 that, speaking of Nebuchadnezzar, his heart was lifted up and his spirit was hardened in pride. And that pride is what leads to the events that we will look at in this chapter, chapter 4. God dealt with his pride. Nebuchadnezzar the king, he wrote, to all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I thought it good to declare the signs and wonders that the Most High has worked for me. And then he gives testimony to the greatness of God, to the power of God, the authority of God. How great are his signs, and how mighty his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion, because he was about to learn, he had learned by the time he wrote that, that Nebuchadnezzar's dominion was not going to be as permanent and as under his thumb as he thought it was. His dominion is from generation to generation. And so it's quite the praise. Exalting God, exalting him for his everlasting reign, testifying to his greatness and his power. But this came only after the events that he was about to recount. This is the preface to his story about what had happened to him. He had to see. God did what was necessary to make him see his lack of control over his own life. God did what was necessary to make him see that it was only by God's will and God's power that Nebuchadnezzar actually occupied a place of authority and power. It was by God, God's purpose, God's power, God's choosing, and only by that he had that place. But in the account of chapter 4, we see that he had another prophetic dream, a dream that the Lord gave to him. And so, of course, not being a man who seemed to learn quickly from his spiritual mistakes, he again trotted out all of the magicians, the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers. This time he remembered his dream. Here's my dream. Would you explain my dream to me? And none of the magicians, the astrologers and the Chaldeans and the soothsayers could interpret the dream. So finally it was like, maybe I better call in Daniel. So he brought in Daniel the prophet. And I'm not going to read the dream for time's sake. You can read about it in verses 10 through 17. But he saw a huge tree that grew into gigantic stature. It bore fruit. It offered shade. It benefited everyone and even the animals who sheltered under it. But then a decree was given to cut down the tree. And then we read these verses verses 15 through 16. Nevertheless, leave the stump and the roots in the ground, bound with a band of iron. Iron speaks of power. Bronze speaks of judgment. Bound with a band of iron and bronze, God was going to protect the stump. In the tender grass of the field, let it be wet with the dew of heaven. And then it ceases to be it. Let him graze with the beasts on the grass of the earth. Let his heart be changed from that of a man. Let him be given the heart of a beast, and let 7 times, that is 7 years, pass over him. And so by the end of that, you see very clearly this is not just a strange thing about an empire or a situation or a tree. This is about a person, about a him, not an it. And so as Daniel began to consider, as the Lord showed Daniel the meaning, the significance of this prophetic dream, he had to tell the dream, the explanation of the dream, to King Nebuchadnezzar. Now at first, Daniel was absolutely stunned. He was set back. He was shocked by what he knew he had to tell the king. And so it says there in Daniel 4:19, then Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, was astonished for a time. He was so stunned he couldn't speak. He was stunned for a time, and his thoughts troubled him. So the king spoke and said, Belteshazzar, do not let the dream or its interpretation trouble you. Now I want you to remember that statement that he made. Don't let the dream trouble you. Don't let the interpretation trouble you. And so Belteshazzar, that was the name that they gave him in Babylon, Daniel answered and said, my Lord, may the dream concern those who hate you, and its interpretation concern your enemies. He took no pleasure in having to convey this message to the king. I believe that the Lord's judgments, no matter how severe they may seem, the Lord's judgments are always correct. But especially in those severe judgments, we cannot rightly ever take pleasure in the fact that someone is going to undergo a severe judgment from the hand of the righteous, the holy, and almighty God. Many years ago, and I'm not going to give any of the details, but the Lord spoke something to me about a person. I will tell you what the Lord said to me. He's a Judas. Now let that sink in for a minute. And I did not care for the person. I knew there were some real problems with the person. But when the impact of what the Lord spoke to me hit, I was rocked back. It was like somebody had hit me hard in the solar plexus. I was shocked. Some of you, many of you will remember Ivan Hartzler. He happened to walk in the church building at that time, and my office at that time was directly behind the platform next to the back door, and he walked in and he said, hi, and he stopped and he said, what's wrong? Because apparently the look on my face was one that showed the fact that I had heard something that I didn't want to hear. And so Daniel felt that. I don't know what his feelings were toward the king on a personal level, but this was going to be a terrible thing, and he took no pleasure in it. But he was faithful to give the message. Daniel told Nebuchadnezzar who was represented by the great tree. It is you, O king, who have grown and become strong, for your greatness has grown and reaches to the heavens, and your dominion to the ends of the earth. I'm going to read, I didn't bring a lot of outside scriptures, but I'm going to read a great deal of Daniel 4. So we go on to Daniel 4, verses 23 and 25, or through 25, and he gives the explanation of the vision. And inasmuch as the king saw a watcher, someone set by God, apparently an angel, to observe, just to be his observer. When God judges, by the way, he knows, but he takes every step not only to be righteous, but to be seen as righteous. He went down to see what was going on in Sodom and Gomorrah. He knew, but he took every step. And so a watcher, a holy one, coming down from heaven and saying, chop down the tree and destroy it, but leave the stump and roots in the earth. We're not going to kill it. Leave it there, guarded, bound with a band of iron and bronze in the tender grass of the field. Let it be wet with the dew of heaven. Let him graze with the beasts of the field till 7 years pass over him. This is the interpretation, O king. And this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my lord the king. They shall drive you from men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make you eat grass like oxen. You say, oh, nobody can survive on grass. We're talking about God doing something here. God can do as he will. People try to nitpick as if they thought God couldn't do. He'll eat grass like oxen. They shall wet you with the dew of heaven, and 7 years shall pass over you, till you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses. Now that was a blow to Nebuchadnezzar's pride, because he was a self-made man, right? He had done what was necessary to achieve the high status and the rulership and the power that he had. But judgment was about to come on him, and pride was about to be abased. You know, there's going to come a time, come a day, when all of those who choose to have nothing to do with God, who refuse his offer of grace, who deny the fact that he is the author and the source of every good thing, it will come a day when they face what the book of Revelation calls the second death. What is death? Well, it's the time when you are no longer, all the stuff you see around you is no longer accessible to you. You're someplace else. For us, that's not a bad thing. You know, it's like, if you're used to eating, I like McDonald's, but if you're used to eating at McDonald's every day, and suddenly somebody says you've got a lifetime pass to 5-star restaurants wherever you want to go, it's like, okay. The end of our contact with this world will not be a terrible thing for us. But in rejecting God, all his works, all he gives, there will be a cutting off from God, from all of his good things, and a shutting up to eternal darkness and judgment. God is light. Don't want God? Shut up to darkness. That's going to be a terrible thing, and we take no pleasure in it. But while we are here on earth, understand that there are many acts of judgment that seem very harsh, but many acts of judgment that come from the hand of our stern Father, who will not just let things go as if, well, you got to be a little patient. Well, he's patient. You got to overlook some things. No, God doesn't overlook. There are many acts of judgment from the Lord that are actually teaching moments. Times when the Lord will chasten you. And he's not just giving you a whooping because you made him mad. I want you to learn some things. Nebuchadnezzar had a desperate need to learn who God was. There are many judgments that are an outreach from the Lord himself to foolish people, offering truth and offering spiritual opportunity that they would not otherwise receive. He did that with Saul of Tarsus. He did the only thing that... God does what's necessary. Some people think, well, if God would do this for me, remember the rich man and Lazarus. The rich man died. Oh, go talk to my brothers, because my brothers, if they'd hear from, they have the word. If they would hear, they would hear the word. God did what was necessary to show Nebuchadnezzar that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses. Now, if you want to get wound up in politics, that's your business. I don't have dominion over your life and your viewpoints. But you can say, that person never should have been elected. God rules in the kingdom of men, and he gives it to whomever he chooses. That's Bible. You think that's over the top? It's Bible. It's the word of God. Be careful how you decide. And so Nebuchadnezzar, that man of whom Daniel would later say his heart was lifted up, his spirit was hardened. Nebuchadnezzar was warned. Did he take heed, or did he continue in pride and arrogance of heart? He did not change. He did not take heed. Remember when he said, Daniel, don't let the dream or its interpretation trouble you? And he took his own advice. God warned him of something very terrible that was about to happen to him. He wasn't troubled. He just moved on. And he continued to believe that his accomplishments were due to him and to him alone. He was arrogant. He was proud. We read in Daniel chapter 4, beginning with verse 29, at the end of the 12 months. He was walking about the royal palace of Babylon. The king spoke, saying, is not this great Babylon that I have built for a royal dwelling by my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty? Where's God in that picture? Where's the warning in that picture? It's not there. And so while the word was still in the king's mouth, a voice fell from heaven, King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken, the kingdom has departed from you. I've done all this on my own. Really? Watch this. And they shall drive you from men. Absolute fulfillment of the prophecy. And your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make you eat grass like oxen, and 7 years shall pass over you until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses. And that very hour, the word was fulfilled concerning Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from men and ate grass like oxen. His body was wet with the dew of heaven till his hair had grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. Now, we as Christians aren't in that same position of not acknowledging God at all, but I will say that that same sort of pride can creep into our hearts. Christians can walk in that kind of arrogance, thinking that somehow we deserve the credit for the things that God has done or given to us. In 1 Corinthians 4:7, for who makes you differ from another? Whoops, I'm a slide behind. Who makes you differ from another? And what do you have that you did not receive? You ever know a little rich snot kid? Forgive the, that's not polite language, but you know, daddy's rich, so the kid is entitled, right? We can get that way. God is so abundant and kind in his provision spiritually and even naturally. The truth that he gives us to understand, the ability he gives us to understand that truth, the Holy Spirit he gives to teach us that truth. But we can sort of be puffed up because we know more, or God has blessed us in a different way than someone else. That's a dangerous thing. The Corinthians had been filled with the Holy Spirit. The gifts of the Spirit were active in that assembly. They embraced a great deal of solid, sound doctrine. But without going into the reason for the statement, in 1 Corinthians 5:2, it's, and you are puffed up. They just all swelled up like you're something more than you are. None of us are exempt from that tendency. Now, again, we're not in the same position as unsaved Nebuchadnezzar. To our minds, it's kind of a balancing act. You know, I look at our pastor. You know, he's in a situation, in a position where he has to make certain stands about certain kinds of behavior. He has to make certain stands about certain kinds of teaching. He cannot waver, not if he's going to be faithful to his calling. You know, and I know what that's like. But it's kind of a balancing act in our minds. Uncompromising the truth that God gives, not backing off from the reality of the spiritual calling and abilities that God has placed in our lives, the authority that he gives us in certain situations, the responsibilities that he calls us to, but continuing to walk in humility, knowing that we are nothing in ourselves. If any man thinks that he is anything, something, he doesn't know anything. If you think that you're really somebody spiritually, as if you had done it, you don't know anything. But back to Nebuchadnezzar. He was given a time frame and a purpose for what would befall him. Daniel 4:16 and then 26. Let his heart be changed from that of a man, let him be given the heart of a beast, and let 7 years pass over him. Verse 26, and inasmuch as they gave the command to leave the stump and roots of the tree, your kingdom shall be assured to you after you come to know that heaven rules. It wasn't open-ended. It's going to be 7 years, and during those 7 years, it will finally come to your realization that God's in charge. And so, for 7 years, he exhibited signs that we would call serious mental illness. For 7 years, he wasn't able to defend himself or his throne. For 7 years, he was unable to rule. For 7 years, you know, he was just crazy. And yet, when the 7 years elapsed, he got back on the throne. God's purpose was completed. The prophecy was fulfilled. Let me just back up for just a moment. That was a time when violent ambition was the path to riches and political authority. You got it by the edge of the sword. You got it by killing your enemies. You got it by this, that, and the other thing. But it wasn't like this nice, polite, they're not polite anymore, election that we have in our country. It was like blood was shed. Now, in that time, would it have made sense to those around him who hungered for power not to assassinate Nebuchadnezzar? Not to get him out of the way so they could just go ahead and take over the throne? He was unable to defend himself. He wasn't unable to do anything. And yet God had said, this is the way it's going to work out. And when it was done, that was exactly the way it worked out. I was restored to my kingdom. An excellent majesty was added to me. God rules. You ever have a setback and it just feels like everything has fallen apart? God rules. Did you ever feel like something was God's purpose for your life and then at a certain point it doesn't seem like it's going to happen and you didn't know what to think? God rules. God's in charge. And his will be done. And if we seek him and allow him to work in us, his will be done in our lives. And this was a case in which, no, Nebuchadnezzar wasn't seeking him, but God had said, this is what I'm going to do. Because God knew what the outcome would be in Nebuchadnezzar's heart. God's in charge. And what seems impossible, what seems silly to even think it could happen, if God says, I'm going to do this, trust God. God rules in the kingdom of men. Go to Daniel chapter 4, verses 34 through 37, the words of Nebuchadnezzar. And at the end of the time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up my eyes to heaven, and my understanding returned to me, and I blessed the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever and ever. What a change. For his dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. It's not that God doesn't like you or just thinks that you're worth throwing away, but compared to his power, majesty, wisdom, all those things, we're not a drop in the bucket. Are reputed as nothing. No one can restrain his hand. Let's go after Nebuchadnezzar now. No one can restrain God's hand or say to him, what have you done? This doesn't make any sense. What? Oh, people say, why did God let this happen to me? If you said that, please forgive me, but have you ever stopped to think how dumb that question is to those who should know Romans 8:28, all things work together for good to those that love God? Why did God let this? Because he had a purpose. He rules. He's in charge. What have you done? He did right. At the same time, my reason returned to me, and for the glory of my kingdom, my honor and splendor returned to me. I didn't go out and make it happen. It happened. My counselors and my nobles. You know, this guy's a little nuts. Why should we go talk to him? My counselors and my nobles resorted to me, and I was restored to my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added, more than before, added to me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all of whose works are truth, and his ways justice. And those who walk in pride, here he is speaking from experience, those who walk in pride, he's able to put down. This is not some excellence in himself that he found. It was God. Yeah, he was the head of gold, but why was he the head of gold? Because eventually he embraced, you know, gold is a picture of deity and the nature of God. He embraced who God was for himself. And I don't understand what's the difference between one person and another. Why does one reject God? Why does one accept God? How is the one man like Pharaoh in Egypt hardens his heart so completely that eventually when logic would have shown him that he was being stupid, God hardened his heart because it was just time. And others like Nebuchadnezzar and Saul of Tarsus, like the thief on the cross, eventually submit their will to his. I don't know what the difference is. Only God knows. But let me give you just the takeaway in closing of what I have long seen as the primary lesson foremost. I mean, the issue of pride is the big lesson. That's the big lesson. But how did he learn that lesson? How did he learn that I'm not the one? I'm not the doer. I'm not the great one. I'm not the important one. Don't put me at the front of things, because now we know. How did he learn that lesson? God told him. God showed him. And God gives us kind of the purpose for it all in verse 17, the latter part of that verse, in order that the living, who is included among that list of the living? Well, are you dead? Everybody alive is included. That the living, all living, may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, gives it to whomever he will, and sets over it, oh, that person doesn't deserve to be in office, sets over it the lowest of men. Get over it. He could have dealt with the king very differently. He could have dealt with him very privately. God can do things as he will. But he did it this way. He gave this prophecy. He caused it to be completely fulfilled. He set forth every detail of the lesson because he wanted this truth set forth in a way that we would all see it. And if we see it, if we embrace it, if we believe it, if we let it change our thinking, our perspective on world events, our perspective on the course of this life, our individual life, the course of nations, the course of this global society, our perspective will be utterly transformed. Don't be conformed to the world. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind.